This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. The legal information presented on In Legal Terms is meant to provide general information about the topics discussed and is not necessarily the opinion of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The information conveyed does not create any type of attorney-client relationship. Please consult an attorney provider before making any decisions about your specific legal questions.
Welcome to In Legal Terms from MPB Think Radio. It's the show all about you and your rights. Our host is Professor Richard Gershon of the University of Mississippi School of Law. I'm Liz Gill. Hello, Professor Gershon.
Good morning, Liz. I hope your week is off to a good start. Your weekend was a good one. And today, we are honored to have Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom back on the show. He has been a frequent guest and always adds so much to the conversation. And I think he's really been a great resource for our listeners. And Judge Odom, good morning. Please tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a judge.
Good morning, Ms. Gill, Mr. Gershon. I am a Rankin County Chancery Court Judge, 20th Chancery Court District. I was elected by the good people of Rankin County back in 2018 and have enjoyed serving as Chancery Court Judge for the last 3.5 years and looking forward to it's an election year for judges. Let's make sure everybody remembers that the judges will be on the ballot this year. It will be important to go back to the polls and look forward to serving some more for the people of Rankin County.
Well, when they do vote for Chancery Court Judge, would you please remind them what Chancery Court actually handles, what kind of cases you handle in Mississippi?
Well, it's a court that usually affects all of us. Folks are going to come in contact with the Chancery Court most likely during their life. I mean, we handle domestic relations matters. So if there is a divorce or a subsequent custody proceeding or a modification proceeding, if there is a paternity action, we handle adoptions, we handle estate proceedings as well. So if there's a matter of probate, then that will go through the Chancery Court. We handle property law disputes. If there is what we call a dispute involving real property, then that'll be handled by the Chancery Court. We handle various appeals from administrative agencies. So if you get a decision you don't like at the Department of Revenue, then it would come to the Chancery Court where we handle that as well. But the overwhelming majority of what we handle are domestic relations cases, which unfortunately a lot of people have experience in the Chancery Court with.
And Judge, you and I were talking before the show that a lot of people may never be in a lawsuit involving maybe suing over business matters or personal injury actions, things like that. But as you mentioned, the court that they're most likely to come in contact with would be the Chancery Court. So it's really an important court. And one of the things, go ahead, I'm sorry, please.
No, I was going to say, even if they're not a party to it, I'm sure that they've been called as a witness or they may have to be serve as a witness in a case involving someone they know or love. So a lot of people come in contact with our court.
And one of the things that you work on and deal with is name changes. And that's what we're going to be focusing on name changes. So for example, somebody gets a divorce, they want to change their name, they're in front of you. How does that process work? What steps do they need to take to change their name?
Well, different steps in different situations. You raised a common situation, and that is during the course of a divorce. A lot of times, someone may not want to have their last name changed from their maiden name because they might have children that they want to maintain that same name. But a lot of times, a ex-wife may want to revert back to her maiden name as her surname. And that is something that is frequently requested during the divorce proceedings that we also grant freely during the divorce proceedings, but it must be requested in order for a court to be able to order it. So that's one of the things that we want to remind your listeners, many of whom may be attorneys, is if you're representing a female in a divorce that wants to revert to her maiden surname, make sure you request that relief from the court. That's one situation where it may arise.
We are going to be talking about changing your name and how do you do that in Mississippi. You can send your questions to our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. We have a call. Let's go to Jackson and speak with Veronica. Veronica, we're glad you've called into In Legal Terms today. What's your comment or question?
Hi, thanks for having me, Judge Odom, Professor Gershon. It's just the strangest coincidence. I just got my name changed with Judge Owens. I just walked out of the courtroom and turned on NPR and heard this. But my comment is, I'm actually transgender, and so my reason for changing my name is a little bit different than, I guess, some of the more common reasons. But it's something that, you know, a lot of people in the transgender community, this is really important for us. So I was assigned male at birth, meaning I was born looking like a boy, but I am definitely a woman. And I changed my name to Veronica to reflect that. I guess my question is, so going through this process, it was really straightforward for me to change my name. I found a website where I could get the petition drawn up and represent myself. It was a lot harder to do a gender marker change. It was kind of confusing to even see what the law was, and it seemed like at one point it was possible to do that, and now it's not. You know, as a woman, looking like a woman, it's really difficult for me to pull out a driver's license and for it to have an M for male on it. It's just really inconvenient in public. So I guess my question is, what is the current law on that in Mississippi, and is there any way to change your gender marker on a driver's license and not just your name if you're transgender or gender nonconforming?
That is an interesting question. The common law and even the statutory law gives the Chancery Court the authority to change the name of a person, and even gives them the authority to have that change marginally notated on the birth certificate. I looked, because I knew this would probably be an issue raised. I looked for whether there was a law on changing of a gender on a birth certificate. Could not find one in the state of Mississippi. I know that other states have that. I would imagine that would be a matter for the legislature if they're going to allow a change of a birth fact on a vital record. It's possible that the Chancery Courts have the common law authority to enter that order, changing a gender, if in fact there is a different gender than that which was present at the time of birth. But no, there's not a statute in the state of Mississippi yet that I'm aware of reflecting the ability to change gender later in life.
Judge, okay. There is though. I know on driver's licenses, as of November 1st of 2021, the Driver Service Bureau will change a gender marker on a driver's license or state ID upon receipt of a completed gender designation form. The form has to be filled out and signed by the applicant, by a physician, therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, or social worker, indicating that. I don't know if it applies to birth certificates. But at least on driver's license for the caller, I would talk to the Mississippi Driver Service Bureau.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a Chancery Court matter at all. But that's relatively new.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. But when I was researching for the show, I did see where the Department of Public Safety had that ability or that available to individuals for their driver's license.
Well, Veronica, this show happened right when, serendipitously, when you needed it, and you spoke into the universe that if Mississippi, the population of Mississippi, would like to have that ability for our transgender community, then they need to contact their state elected officials. We mention that on MPB all the time. Our laws are created by us. And when we don't like a law, it is up to us to contact our elected officials and let them know our feelings or run ourselves so that we can make those changes. And I'm so very glad that you were able to call to point this out. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. Thank you.
You can send us your email questions to our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're discussing changing your name in Mississippi. But what about naming children? We're going to learn just a little bit about that next. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Ryder Taff, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advisory and co-host of Money Talks. Each week, we take your personal finance questions and tell you about a money topic we hope you find helpful. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
When you look at your vehicle, think of MPB. Need to get rid of your ride? Donate it by calling 877-MPB, the number 4-CAR. Need to have some work done on your truck? Listen to AutoCorrect Thursdays at 10, Saturdays at 11. An MPB license plate reminds you that MPB is with you wherever you go. Go to your county office and ask for an MPB car tag. MPB and cars, better together.
This is In Legal Terms. Now, not everybody has a chance to listen to our show live. If you've missed any of our program, you can go back and listen to the whole show from our website, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org. Our host is Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. I'm Liz Gill. Now, many countries have a list of prohibited names and also a list of approved names. Countries' rules might include you can't have a number or an emoji or be a military title or an offensive word or be the same name as a sibling. And at least a dozen countries, including Germany, Spain, Portugal, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Morocco, Japan, and Malaysia, have baby naming laws. This morning, we're talking about changing your name in Mississippi with our guest, Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom. And we are off to a fantastic start with that first call, an individual who had just gone in and had their name changed and then got in the car and turned us on. Judge Odom, we are so glad that the stars have aligned to have you on for this show.
I always like to be places where the stars align. And I wanted to mention, your last caller raised another common situation dealing with name changes. Veronica, as an adult, wanted to change her name. I guess it was her first name that she wanted to change, which is something that we commonly do in the Rankin County Chancery Courts. The courts have the common law ability to make that change so long as it's not for a fraudulent purpose, so long as the reason is satisfactory and consistent with the public interest. So adults, if they want to change, whether it's their first or their last name, have a relatively easy vehicle in order to do that, which Veronica, your last caller, highlighted. She was able to do it representing herself, which is always great that we can provide low-cost legal services in the Chancery Court. So I was happy to hear that. And, you know, we frequently get people that want to change their surname to represent someone that's important in their life or to honor somebody else, which we are always happy to do. Our belief is if you're an adult, then and it's not for fraudulent purpose or any other reason against the public interest, then you're entitled to do it. This is America.
So, Judge, if it, well, I mean, what would a fraudulent reason would be? Would that be like if I was under, if they were looking to arrest me under a certain name and I decided I'll change my name so that I'll be a different person? Would that be a reason to deny my name change?
Absolutely. If you were on the sex offender registry list, you're not going to be able to change your name in order to avoid having to deal with the laws reflecting that. If you're trying to avoid a creditor by changing your name, if you're trying to avoid a warrant for your arrest, that those would be fraudulent purposes that the court would not allow a name change in that situation.
Now, it seems like, you know, the name change that happens under state law and is great, and you know, then use that name on your driver's license and going forward on state documents, but there's more involved, really. So. And I know the Chancery Court doesn't deal with Social Security or the IRS, but are there other things that people need to do to change their name in other systems?
Oh, gosh. Well, usually, if you look, well, usually what you need in hand is that court order allowing the name change. And if you go to the Bureau of Vital Statistics or the Passport Office or the Department of Public Safety and need to get your name changed on an ID or a passport or something along those lines, usually what they tell you is bring that court order in hand, and that's really all you need from the court's perspective. So the initial hump is just getting that order allowing the name change so that the federal government will then allow you to obtain that passport in your new name. But from what I've seen online, I've never had to do it myself, it should be a relatively easy process so long as you have a certified copy of that court order.
Right, and the Social Security website looks like it's easy to navigate that way. And so this is something that people need to think about. You know, they got to check other boxes besides just their trip to get the initial name change. So Veronica, you know, be sure to go into Social Security as well and other websites that now can reflect your name.
Judge Odom, we started off talking about one of the reasons someone might need to change their name was a divorce, and you pointed out that if someone wanted to change their last name or revert to a maiden name from a divorce, make sure that their attorney knows. Is that all done at the same time? Is there a window of opportunity to get that done during a divorce? What happens if the year after or 3 years after your divorce, you go, you know, I'd like to go back to my maiden name? Is changing your name after a divorce a different animal from changing your name on a Thursday?
Well, it's not much of an animal to begin with. It's a very easy process. The deal is, if you are asking for it during the divorce, you have to give notice to your soon-to-be ex that you will be changing the name. And sometimes people don't want to have to deal with that if that's going to be an issue. And believe it or not, ex-spouses can be difficult to deal with sometimes. So many times, folks will just go through the divorce, not ask for the name change, but at any point in time thereafter, they can go back to the Chancery Court, request the name change, and at that point, since they're an adult and they would be the only ones affected by that name change, there's no need to notice anybody else, including your ex. So it just may be an easier process to do it that way. But at no point in time is it difficult.
And to one other thing, too, is when people get married, you know, I think a lot of people assume that the woman must take the husband's last name or automatically takes the husband's last name. But my understanding is that's not the case. In fact, my wife has kept her last name. And when we moved to Mississippi, a newspaper article said his wife, the former Donna Levine, and we laugh about that because, well, no, she's still the same one. You know, she
the current.
But so is that, I mean, is that automatic when people get married if the last name of the one of the spouses is changed to the other person's last name?
No, that's a longstanding tradition in the state of Mississippi and I guess in other areas in the United States. But one of the places where it is mandatory is in a paternity action. Now, if a child was born and the father is not named on the birth certificate because perhaps it was not known or the birth mother didn't provide that information, in a subsequent paternity action, there is a statute that states that once the court adjudicates paternity, the surname of the child shall be that of the father. Now, there's exceptions to every rule, and even though that is the statute, there are, you know, cases that talk about, well, everything is governed by the best interest of the child standard. So if it would not be in the best interest of the child based on a preponderance of the evidence, then that statute wouldn't come into play, and the child could keep the surname, I assume, of the birth mother.
We have a call. Let's go to Mobile and speak with Mikey. Mikey, we're so glad that you've called in today to In Legal Terms when our guest is Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom, and we're talking about changing your name in Mississippi. Go ahead, Mikey.
Well, I'm not in Mississippi, but I have a story, and thank you. This is such a great program, as usual. I have a story about my own experience in which married briefly in terms of what I consider marriage, you know, a number of years, but disabled at the end of that, divorced immediately. For other reasons not connected with the disability. And in the interim, I bought the first car that I've ever bought that was new, and the only car that I've ever bought that was new. My husband, my ex-husband, my former husband, still my friend, was the person who went down to do, because I was having some problems with getting around, was the person who went down, and he put things in the married name. Now, I had never used the married name for any of my career things, business things, associations, whatever. But for a number of years, I just kept letting it roll over, you know. I didn't realize, and then I had a guy come up to me who apparently was a new associate of his years and years later, after he had already remarried, who was saying, you know, that car looks just like the one that my buddy is talking about that he lost in a divorce. And I said, no, I'm the original owner. Anyhow, I went down to the courthouse, and it took a while. The ladies down there, as usual, they are so patient with stuff. But it took her a while to figure out that what they had to do to get it in, you know, that was the only record at all that I had in that married name, and that's because he had put it in that married name, surname. And, you know, she said, well, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to sell your vehicle to you for zero and then re-record it in the name that you've got all your, you know, which is my maiden name, okay?
Thanks, Mikey, for that story. Yeah, there are all sorts of different reasons and for changing names and different things that can happen with that. That is our topic today. You can email us your questions about changing your name to our address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're talking with guest Chancery Court Judge Judge Troy Odom, who Professor Gerson and I like to follow on Twitter, about legally changing your name. So what if there's a regime change in your country? Sometimes everybody has to change their name. I'm going to share that story with you next. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Chalkboard Chat. It's an MPB education podcast. It's a variety show providing information and resources for teachers, students, parents, guardians, and everyday people on various topics. It's learning something new with every publication. Chalkboard Chat. Find the podcast or listen from chalkboardchat.mpbonline.org.
You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio. Professor Richard Gerson is our expert host. I'm Liz Gill. We hope that you'll subscribe to our podcast or find MPB Think Radio recordings at mpbonline.org/radio. So here's the story. In the Democratic Republic of Congo in the early 1970s, the president prohibited the use of Christian first names. Citizens all had to replace their Christian first names with one or more ancestral names. But however, in the 1990s, this directive was abolished and the population could use their Christian first names again, but not for official identification purposes. So consequently, Christian first names could not appear on official documents or registers. So in other words, they could only be used in daily life. However, when a different leader came to power in 1997, Christian first names could be again used on official documents and registers. And I'm so glad we don't have any of that kind of change here in the good old U.S. of A. This morning, we're talking about changing your name in Mississippi with our guest, Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom. We do have a phone call. We've got Amy from Jackson who's on the line. Amy, we're glad you've called in to In Legal Terms today. What's your comment or question?
Good morning. I love all of the shows on MPB, and this one is very interesting today. Justice defines even more how lucky we are in the United States that we don't have so many constraints on things like names. My question is not really about changing my name, but it's kind of related, I think. I was adopted when I was younger. My mother died when I was a baby. And so when I was adopted legally, the name on my birth certificate of my mother was changed to my stepmother. Can I change that back to my mother's name? I know, that seems silly, but, you know, there's a reason. And also, in order to do that, do I have to have a lawyer, or is it something I can just do on my own?
The answer to your questions are, yes, you can have it changed. They won't actually change the actual birth certificate line where it says surname to the what they do is they marginally notate it. So I'm sure on your birth certificate there is a marginal notation reflecting the adoption, and so there will be another marginal notation reflecting your desire to name to change your name back to your birth mother's. And in order to do that, just like our earlier caller Veronica, she was able to do it without the need for a attorney. You don't have to have an attorney representing you whenever you do it. Now, it may be easier for you to do so if you have the financial means, since they know exactly how to do it. But there are forms that you can use that are available to individuals that would like to represent themselves. to do what you're asking to do, one of the things you must do is serve process on the Department of Human Services Registrar of Vital Statistics, because there's a statute that requires them to be named as a party and to be served with process when you're seeking to change your surname. That may be a complicated process.
Now, Judge Odom, I don't think she was wanting to change her name. She was wanting to change the name of the mother on the birth certificate. She wanted to not have the adoptive mother on the birth certificate. She wanted to have the birth mother retroactively put back on the birth certificate.
Correct. Thank you for that clarification.
It's like she wanted to remove the sidebar note about the adoption.
Right. Good. Thank you for the clarification. I'll make sure I want to answer the correct question. The same statute that I was talking about, 415723 of the Mississippi Code, still allows for the Chancery Court to change other matters on the birth certificate. So it would just be a matter of bringing that to the court's attention through a petition, and just like a surname change, request that the natural mother be reflected on that birth certificate as well. You would file that petition in Chancery Court, state your case to the respective chancellor, and hope that you would get an order from that chancellor doing so, and then it could be provided to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, who would then note that on the birth certificate. So that would be the method that you would go through to make that.
Okay. Thanks, Judge. I appreciate your help. Thanks, Liz. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Amy. We're so glad you called in. How interesting it is to learn the various reasons someone might want to change their name. If you would like to share your experience, or if you have a question, this is your chance. Apparently, it's a pretty easy process. We're so glad that Judge Troy Odom is here to let us know what you need to do at the Chancery Court of your county or of your Chancery area to let us know how you can change your name.
And what an interesting question that was. In 3.5 years, I had not had that raised in this court, but it seems like a valid way to honor your mom in a situation. So I'm surprised that it hadn't come up before, but I think that would be the way that she would go about doing it, just like she would a name change.
You know, Judge, you deal with divorces and you deal with probate, and those are typically sadder kinds of issues for people, but you also deal with adoptions and name changes, which I think are probably the happier things that happen in your court. Mostly, I always remember my students when they got to participate as third year law students in helping people adopt children. Those are always happy occasions for everyone involved. But you know, it doesn't always work out. And so, Amy call honoring her birth mom is a great one.
Yeah, we go through the destruction of the family unit so often in the court. It's nice to have a situation where you can actually put together a family unit. So you're right. Adoptions are always wonderful occasions in the Chancery Court.
We have a call from Gulfport. Let's find out what Lisa would like to ask on In Legal Terms today. Lisa, go ahead with your comment or question.
So my question is along the same lines as the last caller, but a little different. So I found out at the age of 62 that the person I thought was my birth father was not my birth father. And that was found out through DNA testing. And then, you know, then there was then there was a discussion where the real truth came out. And so I know who my birth father was. And I'm wondering similarly if that's something that could be changed on a birth certificate.
Okay, great.
Well, I don't know that
what is your name?
Yeah, the facts existing at the time of the birth can be changed. They can make a marginal notation on the birth certificate to reflect a court order to that effect. But it's hard to describe. But the Bureau of Vital Statistics in the state of Mississippi takes a position of This is a sacred document that is created at the time of birth. So gender, name, time of birth, date of birth, parents that are noted on there are there for good, are memorialized for good. And we can make marginal notations to note changes in it. So I would imagine that would be one of those instances, since it occurred so far after various statute of limitations and repose have run, that you could change or alter the actual birth certificate other than through a marginal notation. But it can still be done through a portal.
So is this just true of Mississippi documents? Because I was not born in the state of Mississippi. Or is that true all over the United States?
Oh, this is one of those topics that each individual state is allowed to make their own laws on. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit different in Alabama or Louisiana or any other state, I would imagine. I can only speak to Mississippi law. It may be a completely different situation in a different state.
Oh, so if she got her birth certificate in a different state, she would need to go through whatever that state's process for amending a birth certificate?
Right, I don't have any jurisdiction to tell Alabama to amend a birth certificate. In Mississippi, right. If you're not a resident of the state of Mississippi, but your birth certificate, you were born here, then you can simply file a petition in any county, in any chancery court county in the state of Mississippi. They try to make it easier for non-residents.
Okay, so that would be the reverse for me. I'm a resident of Mississippi, but my birth certificate is from another state. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, thank you for that information. Appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
We are getting the interesting questions today. Let's go to Crystal Springs and see what Gail has a question or a comment about with Judge Troy Odom. We are putting him through the paces. Gail, we're glad you've called in. What's your comment or question?
Hi, Judge Odom. I go by my middle name. My first name is now used because I have Medicare. And so I go into several doctor's offices and they're calling me another name. And so I'm wondering, if I were to change my name legally, would I have to do something to keep Medicare, change Medicare, Social Security, or whatever, so I don't have to go by this name I've never gone by?
In legal terms, what's your name? Where are you calling from today?
Now, that's a great question.
Right,
and I am not familiar with the process that Medicare would require you to go through in order to have it reflected in their system. But if it's like any other Social Security Administration or the Department of Public Safety, you would need to have that order in hand, a certified copy of that order in hand, for them to make that change in their system, assuming that Medicare would do that.
Okay, that's a very simple answer.
Sure.
And as someone who goes by his middle name, I go by my middle name. I hate my first name. My first name is Ira, and I am a tax person, and you can't be a tax person and also be Ira. So, but I get, you know, I just tell my doctors at some point, please, my preferred name, and most of them will let you give their preferred name, and that might be the easier thing to do. It's just to kind of let people know that you prefer to go by your middle name as opposed to having to go through that process, because then you got to think about, once you change your name, you also have to think about credit reports and everything else. So there's a lot involved.
Yeah, a lot involved, in addition to attorney's fees and court costs that you would have to think about.
Let's go to find out what's up in Tupelo. Con is called in. What is your comment or question today, Con?
And of course, he changed my name, Tom, but
we are having a very, very hard time to hear you, Con. Is there a way that you can make your phone call a little clearer?
Okay. Is that any better?
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Now, Benny, like I said, he changed my name. It's Tom.
Oh, Tom. Okay.
evidently, my earbud was dying, so I swapped to the other one. My curiosity question would be on, legal recognition of a nom de plume or stage name, where, you know, you're keeping your privacy by not using, you know, your legally birth name, but you're publicly known by another. Like, say, you wrote a book and you used a pseudonym, or for example, the big famous one is Gordon Matthew Sumner. Nobody knows him by that name. He stings. You know. So what all has to be in place for like legal recognition of a second identity, I guess you'd say, of the public identity?
Didn't Prince actually go to a court in Minnesota and have his name changed to whatever that was? In order to have it legally recognized, you're still going to have that order in place. Right. Otherwise, I can go to, you know, my local McAllister's and have them call me Frank all I want. You know, Stephen King did that with Richard Buck as well. He never had his name legally changed, but he sure enough went by that to see if he could sell more books.
For example, like if I signed a document for like, I don't know, a recording contract or book publishing or something, and I'm signing it with that, I mean, how do they go about tying the two together so that, you know, it's still me, it's just not under the quote legal name.
But I am going to just guess and tell you that in situations where somebody wants to publish a book anonymously, which they want to do all the time, Simon Rushdie, there's probably a separate contract entered into by the author and the publishing company indicating that they will only refer to them by this pseudonym and are prevented from telling anybody about it.
Ooh, that's what happened with J.K. Rowling. She decided to publish a book, one of her spy novels, under a different name. But then the wife of one of the attorneys knew who her name was and let it released. And boy, was she mad. And didn't they have to pay some money?
Yeah. Well, I kind of realized, I thought about it when I saw how, like, you can have a corporation, but then you have a DBA, doing business as. And, you know, nobody refers to the company by their corporation name. They refer to it by the brand, I guess you'd say, more well-known or advertised name.
Yeah, if you want to go get a sandwich at Nukes, you go to Nukes. You don't go to their corporate name. You go to their DBA. I see what you're saying.
Well, maybe recognition is really about recognition. You know Sting. Everybody knows Sting. And as you mentioned, he did do one of his albums was Sumner's Tales, Ten Sumner's Tales, but using his real name. But I think we just recognize those people by that name.
Yeah, that man was in the original Dune. If he'd asked me to call him Sting, I'm calling him Sting.
Thanks, Tom, for calling in today. We take your questions at our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. What are some popular baby names in the U.S.? I'm going to tell you how you can find out. You're listening to the Mississippi Authority for Educational Television, doing business as MPB.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
Thank you for being part of In Legal Terms. If you've missed any of our program, you can listen to the whole show on the MPB Think Radio YouTube channel. It's also available on the MPB Public Media app, as are most of our local shows. Our host is Professor Ira Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. I am Elizabeth Gill. At 11 a.m. Central on Tuesdays, following our over-the-air broadcast, you can hear Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking, with Dr. Susan Buttress on MPB Think Radio. So in the Social Security Administration, they keep up with baby names because you have to apply for a Social Security number to get a tax deduction for your child. So they have just released their compilation of the most popular baby names for 2021. It is a very fun search engine to kind of play around with. Their website is ssa.gov. We're talking with Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom. We're talking about changing names, and on the show information for this show, I'm going to have a great piece of paper from the Mississippi ACLU. It's on Mississippi name change guidelines. Procedures may vary by county, but step one is go to the Chancery Court. Contact the Chancery Court where you live to start your process.
And Liz, I'm glad you know my first English name, but I have another name too. I have a Hebrew name. That's Yitzhak Ruvain. I won't make you try to pronounce that. So we're given a totally separate name at birth, actually, for males, 8 days after birth. I was named Yitzhak Ruvain. But Judge, let's switch focus, if we can, from names to probate, because we got a tweet at us last night with a question, and it's, is there any precedent for sealing an estate case, because there's some news about possibly sealing an estate case, and how would it be administered without notice to creditors, third parties, and how would real title be transferred if it was sealed? So how would that sealing even work?
Well, to answer the first question, I'm sure there is precedent, because I know of probate proceedings that have been sealed before by other Chancery Court judges. If there is a reason, a very good reason for it, then I can imagine that a chancellor would want to seal a probate proceeding. I have not been presented with a case that required it. The public is entitled to public records, and the public is entitled to know exactly what we're doing in their court system, to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing as Chancery Court judges. And one of the main ways that the public can do that and satisfy themselves that we're doing the right job is by making it public. So, but there are certainly situations, as you can imagine, where we are required or can choose in our discretion to seal proceedings if the private rights are outweigh the public's interest. Sexual abuse of a child is commonly a situation where we seal proceedings because of the protection of the children. But in a situation where a probate proceeding, a will or an estate is sealed, it's not sealed to interested and necessary parties. Creditors, of course, would be a necessary party to a probate proceeding. So you still would notify creditors in the same manner as provided under the statutes by filing an affidavit, identifying all known creditors and making sure that you have sent notice to them to file their probate claim, and also by publishing in the newspaper for those creditors. And just because the case is sealed doesn't mean that the names and the cause number is sealed. It's just that the pleadings inside of it are sealed. So you can still publish in the newspaper the names of the individuals and the cause number. Was there a third part to that question that I failed?
I think you answered it perfectly, Judge. Thank you. And I think that's it. I mean, so yeah. I mean, the general public, I guess, if you seal a record, the general public won't be able to see that information. But the parties still have to be able to see that information.
Absolutely. And I don't like sealing anything because it's supposed to be public, even though a lot of what we're dealing with is nobody's business.
But thank you. We've run out of time. Thank you.
I will talk all day, Liz.
Chancery Court Judge Troy Odom, we appreciate you. Wow, what an interesting show we've had today. But they're all interesting, but this one was kind of out there, kind of interesting. We want to thank Java Chapman and Jay White for helping us put on our show. And so for Professor Richard Gershon, who hosts from the University of Mississippi School of Law, I'm Liz Gill. We want you to join us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for MPB Think Radio in Legal Terms.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.